This is 1A. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, in for Jen White. Humans have been contemplating the end of the universe for ages. We love to ask, what happens at the end of this, when the stars and planets collapse? What will that look like, and how will it happen? Pages upon pages have been filled with these questions, from scientists and physicists to artists and poets like Robert Frost.
Some say the world will end in fire. Some say in ice. From what I've tasted of desire, I hold with those who favor fire. But if it had to perish twice, I think I know enough of hate to say that for destruction, ice is also great and would suffice.
These days, we may be getting closer to an answer. Cosmologist Katie Mack has researched and outlined five of the most likely ways the universe will end in her new book, The End of Everything, Astrophysically Speaking. And it's pretty good timing because these days it may feel like the end of the universe. But we're here to set the record straight on what the end will actually look like and why you don't need to have an existential crisis just yet. Professor Mack, welcome to 1A.
Hi, thanks for having me.
How did you begin this research? How do you start researching the end of the universe as we know it?
Well, in my cosmology research in general, you know, I think about the big questions, how the universe began, what it's made of, how it's been changing over time. And so just as a researcher in the course of my studies, I would occasionally run into questions about the ending, you know, what's going to happen with the expansion of the universe in the future and what other weird things could come in and happen that could change our evolution in the cosmos. And so I found that I was getting more and more intrigued by those questions about the end, you know, like what is going to happen? How are we finding out?
Have you always been asking this question even before the work began? I noticed in your book, you dedicated it to your mother. You said who's been there from the beginning.
Yeah.
Would Mama Mac be surprised?
No. So she was definitely a huge influence for me getting into science. She was always interested in science fiction when I was growing up. She still loves science fiction, and she would take me to the observatory, to public talks. You know, she took me to see Stephen Hawking speak, and you know, really helped me get into that world of, you know, the weird stuff, the big questions of the cosmos. So I definitely got some of my interest in science and the weirder parts of science,
yeah.
Maybe from her.
So thinking about the end of the world, you know, it may hit a bit close to home right now for some people.
Yeah.
Do you find people recoil at the topic, or is there a morbid fascination with thinking about the end?
I think it goes a few different ways. You know, I think there is a kind of morbid fascination. There is this kind of existential thrill of thinking about how everything is going to ultimately fall apart. But I also think that there's something almost hopeful about contemplating the cosmos and the far future, because it takes you out of the present moment. You know, it allows you to think about something other than just basic survival. You can contemplate, you know, how we fit into this bigger picture, how the cosmos is going to change and evolve with or without us. And that can be a very comforting thought, really.
Do people send you their own theories about how the universe...
Yeah, that's an occupational hazard. Anybody working in physics does get messages from people with, you know, their new theories of gravity or time travel or whatever, and you just kind of have to set those aside.
Lou Richards tweeted us and says, in regards to the Big Bang theory, what banged? Where did it come from and where is it now? And so that's a good way to segue into your first theory here. I want to talk about how the universe started.
Yeah. So what we know about the Big Bang is we know that the universe began hotter and denser and in some sense smaller than it is today. So we know that right now the universe is expanding. Distant galaxies are getting farther away from us. Everything's getting farther away from everything else. There's more empty space in the universe. And so we can dial that back and find that in the beginning, everything must have been closer together. And if you take that to its extreme, then everything was touching everything. You know, the universe was this hot, dense place. And and we do have direct evidence of that. We can see the afterglow of the time when the universe was hot and dense everywhere. And so the question then, but there are a couple of questions that come up with that. One is, how did we get to that point? How did the universe start in that hot, dense state. And that's a whole big area of research right now. We're not entirely sure what set that off, what set off that initial sort of primordial fire, what set off the expansion. But we can look at that expansion and we can say, well, what's going to happen next? You know, is the universe going to continue expanding forever, or will the expansion stop and turn around, and will we end up back in that state? Will everything collapse back on itself?
Okay.
And if it does, that's when you get the big crunch. That's an idea that was the leading theory for how the universe would end for a while. Once it was discovered that the universe was expanding, there were debates and there was a lot of uncertainty about whether that expansion would just keep going or whether the gravity of everything in the universe would slow down the expansion enough that it would come back together and mm-hmm. recollapse.
Well, we're going to talk about the big crunch a little bit more in just a moment, but sticking with the Big Bang, here's an email from Carl. He says, as a physicist, I've never been comfortable with the Big Bang theory. While it generally accounts for the early existence and development of the universe, it is inherently unsatisfactory. Katie, is there still a lot of disagreement about the Big Bang?
Some aspects, yes. So the place where there's not disagreement is what I mentioned before about the universe starting out hot and dense, because we do have direct evidence of that. What happened before that is pretty uncertain. So we think that there was probably a very rapid expansion phase called inflation, where the universe very, very quickly became many orders of magnitude larger. And then at the end of that stage, there was the fireball kind of state and the hot, dense beginning. But before, well, for one thing, we don't know for sure if that inflation period did happen, and we don't know what happened before that inflation period. There was a time when people would talk about, like, oh, there was just a singularity, and then everything came out of that. And we know that the simple picture of a singularity, you know, a single point and everything explodes out of that, that simple picture doesn't work. There has to have been something more complex happening, either this rapid expansion phase, or perhaps we could have come out of a previous universe in some way, or branched off of a larger space. There are a few different possibilities there. But exactly what happened at the very, very beginning is still one of the biggest mysteries of physics today.
What else do we need to know about how the universe works in order to understand its demise?
Mostly, you know, we need to know that the universe is expanding now. We need to know that the universe is accelerating in its expansion, and this is something that's quite weird, and mm-hmm. it's due to something we call dark energy, but we don't know what dark energy is, but we do see that something is making the universe expand faster and faster. And, you know, we need to know that there are some other weird things that can happen, and one of the ones that I get into has to do with the fact that the laws of physics can change, and in principle, they could change suddenly enough to be a threat to the universe. And I can talk about that as well. That's mm-hmm. a process called vacuum decay.
Yeah, we'll definitely get into that. I have lots of questions for you, Katie. Don't you worry.
Sure. Okay.
But on this talk of the universe expanding, here's a note from Steve in Tacoma Park, Maryland. He emails, is there any evidence that the entire mass of any galaxy has ever been converted into energy? Is it possible that the energy is powering the expansion of the universe? And I think you sort of alluded to that a moment ago.
Well, something is making the universe expand faster, but it doesn't appear to be a conversion of matter into energy in that sense. Galaxies grow when matter comes together, when gas and dust and things come together in the universe, when dark matter, which is some invisible matter, some invisible stuff that has gravity, when that comes together. We know a lot about how galaxies form, and once they form, we know a lot about how they evolve over time. And we don't know of any process that could obliterate an entire galaxy. Galaxies can change, they can collide with each other, lots of things can happen, but once they're formed, you know, they are a collection of matter, and they evolve in a sort of fairly sensible way. The dark energy, the stuff that's making the universe expand faster, is a totally different phenomenon, and we think it might be just a property of space itself, that space has a kind of expansiveness built into it. We call mm-hmm. that a cosmological constant, where when there's more empty space, it just expands faster and faster. Or it could be something more complicated, some kind of dynamical field, something that can change over time. And all it would really do even then is just expand space. And it doesn't appear to be strongly connected with mm-hmm. galaxies and dark matter, but we don't know where it comes from, and we don't know exactly how it works. So it's one of the big mysteries.
What about the way we study the universe? How do you actually go about doing that?
Oh, there are lots of things you can do. One of the things that one of the most important tools we have is just looking at distant galaxies and seeing how they change and how they move and how they evolve through time. So there's a fantastic tool that we have as astronomers, which is that we can look back in time directly. So anytime we look at anything at all, we're looking at it as it was in the past, because we're seeing the light that's leaving some other object and coming to us, and that travel, that light takes time to travel. And so when we look at a distant galaxy, we're seeing it as it was potentially billions of years ago. And so we can look out into the cosmos and look at all these distant galaxies and see them as they were at earlier times in the history of the cosmos. And therefore, we can trace out the past of the cosmos, how the cosmos has been changing over time, how it's expanding, how it's evolving. And so we can actually look into the past of our own universe and trace out its history. And that allows us to learn more about, you know, the properties of the universe and how it's going to change in the future as well.
So, Katie, let's get into those five theories in the book that we mentioned. You actually started off with the Big Crunch, mm-hmm. which is centered on the notion that the universe is expanding.
Yeah.
First, let's get into the expansion part a bit more. Just explain how that works.
Well, what we see is that things are getting farther away from each other. Sufficiently distant things are moving away. So if you are in a space that is just getting bigger everywhere in the same way, then what that looks like to you is it looks like everything's moving away from you. Now, it's not anything personal. Anywhere you are in the universe, it would look like everything was moving away from you, because what's really happening is that the spaces between all of the galaxies that are not, you know, sort of in groups, are getting bigger. Mm-hmm. So we see that everything is moving away from everything else. And we can see that because we can see how quickly galaxies are moving in the distance. And there's a relationship between the distance and the speed, where the more distant something is, the faster it appears to be moving. And that's just a consequence of the whole universe is getting bigger in the same way everywhere. So we've known about that for quite a while.
So in this particular one, in the Big Crunch, how does the universe eventually end in this scenario?
Well, in the Big Crunch, what happens is that the expansion of the universe would stop and turn around and reverse. And that's the reason that could happen is that the expansion of the universe was set off by the Big Bang, you know, that caused this very rapid expansion to begin. But the universe is full of things like galaxies and dark matter, things that have gravity and that are attracting each other. And so that kind of puts the brake on this expansion. It slows down the expansion. And so if there's enough gravity in the universe, if there's enough matter, then that could be enough to slow down and stop the expansion and make it reverse and pull everything back together. And so there's this question of how those things balance out. And when it was thought that the Big Crunch was the fate of the universe, it was thought that that was because there's so much mass, there's so much stuff in the universe that it could stop and reverse the expansion. And so mm-hmm. what would happen if that were the case is that we'd see galaxies rushing toward us. We'd see galaxies colliding in the universe, and eventually the universe would get so dense and so hot that it would sort of incinerate everything. It would be this very violent kind of end.
Bounce is another one of the theories that is an end. Also, it's sort of a renewal for the universe. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, so in the book, I talk about a few different kinds of bouncing cosmologies or cyclic cosmologies. These are scenarios where the universe would go through an ending and then a new beginning. So you could potentially have something like a Big Crunch, and then the universe could kind of rebound from that and start off a new expansion. And there are a few different ways that can happen. You can have it with a collapse that leads to an expansion. You can have it with a kind of, there are certain scenarios where you have the universe keeps expanding forever and, mm-hmm. and dies that way, and then a new beginning begins after that. So there are a couple of different possibilities for that. And all of them are set up as a way to explain the beginning of the universe, really, because the idea is that if our universe came out of the end of a previous universe, that could explain certain things that are confusing about the start of the cosmos. But it's also an interesting idea, because in some of these situations, you know, some trace of the previous universe could survive into the next one. And so it gives you this sort of hope of some kind of cosmic legacy, for example.
We're getting a ton of questions from folks, and we're going to do our best to get to as many as we can. But we did ask you what questions you wanted to ask Professor Mack about the universe. Here's John from Colorado.
I'd like to know what it's like to fly around a globular cluster. Are the stars as close as our planets in our solar system, or are they a little further away? How tightly packed are those stars? Would really love to know. Thanks.
Hey, Katie, can you take about 30 seconds to educate us, first of all? What is a globular cluster?
Well, a globular cluster is a collection of stars that we think is a very ancient collection of stars. So there are a number of these globular clusters in our galaxy, and you can have thousands, hundreds of thousands of stars packed into kind of a spherical collection, more dense in the center, and it just looks like a clump of stars in a telescope. And we think these are maybe the remnants of galaxies that have been pulled into the Milky Way and sort of compressed and pulled apart, very ancient things. And they are very dense collections of stars. I don't know the density at different stages, but they are sometimes so dense that stars can actually collide with each other and make new kinds of stars, which is a very unusual thing in the cosmos. Generally speaking, stars do not collide with each other. So they're a very special kind of place.
Earlier, we asked you, if you could go anywhere in the galaxy, where would you go? Pat says, the core of our galaxy is the obvious choice. It's going to be the most energetic and crazy place in the galaxy. And Benjamin says, if I could go anywhere in the galaxy, I would go to the moon. As a place we've been to, I know so little about our mysterious satellite. And Joey says, I'd want to go to Mars, but really anywhere, as long as I got to spend a little while in orbit over our pale blue dot. I'd love to see our collective home from space. We're discussing the end of the universe with cosmologist Katie Mack. It hasn't happened yet. Please, don't panic. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We'll hear more from you and our guest in just a moment.
Do you talk about the news with your friends, your family, or maybe perfect strangers? You can get all the facts you need to be up to speed on this busy news cycle on the 1A News Roundup. Find the podcast in your feed every Friday.
I'm Lisa Hagen.
And I'm Chris Haxel. We're the hosts of No Compromise, NPR's new podcast exploring one family's mission to reconstruct America using two powerful tools, guns and Facebook.
New episodes drop every Tuesday. Join us for the No Compromise podcast from NPR.
Now let's get back to the possible ways the universe could end with Katie Mack, cosmologist and author of The End of Everything, Astrophysically Speaking. Katie, let's get into the theory that you say is most accepted by physicists today, which is heat death. Doesn't sound great. What's going on there?
Yeah, so the heat death is also known as the big freeze. It's a scenario that is sort of the opposite of the big crunch. What happens with the heat death is that the universe continues expanding forever, and it expands and expands and expands, and the universe just gets emptier and emptier. And through that process, individual galaxies or groups of galaxies get more and more isolated, and so they end up being sort of alone in these sort of very tiny pools of light. And so over time, there will be fewer collisions of galaxies, fewer stars are forming, the stars that exist in the galaxy will burn out, matter will decay, even black holes will evaporate, and the universe just becomes this very cold, dark, empty, desolate space. And the reason it's called the heat death is that all that's left is kind of a trace amount of the waste heat of creation, just a little bit of spare radiation at a tiny, tiny level, and that's it. And then you end up in this very, very empty universe.
You know, first of all, that's super depressing. I just have to say that.
It really is.
The reality is, you know, when I think about this, is some people just don't have an emotional connection to the end of the universe, right? You know, they likely think about their own death in 40, 50, 60 years from now.
Yeah.
But not so much concerned with when the Earth is going to die. Are you, with this book, are you trying to change minds? Or tell us why it's important to pay attention to this stuff.
I mean, I think... I I have an emotional connection to the end of the universe. I think a lot of people, when they hear about just ultimate destruction like that, it sounds, it's troubling to think of everything going away. I'm not trying to upset people with this book. I don't think people necessarily should worry about the end of the universe. The reason that I think this is an interesting topic is because as humans, we're just curious about the end of the story, and we want to know what's going to happen, and we know a lot. You know, as physicists, we are learning so much about the cosmos. You know, I mentioned some of the big mysteries we have, but we can see the beginning of the universe. We can see the expansion of the universe. We can measure how much stuff is out there. So there's so much that we do know, and there's so much that we're learning, and I want people to have access to that and to have that sense of perspective, you know, of how we fit into this big picture, how we fit into this cosmic narrative. And I think that can be a very helpful and fulfilling thing to think about.
Mm-hmm. And let's hear from some more of our listeners. Here's a listener who called in to share his thoughts. It's Nathan from Danville.
I would love to actually go to a different universe entirely. I'm just totally fascinated by the idea of the multiverse and that this universe isn't the only one. So if there was a way to jump into a black hole or a supermassive black hole and zip through some type of wormhole or anything into another galaxy, onto another planet, or a different place completely in space-time, that would be splendid.
Ooh, good thought, Nathan. What are your thoughts, Katie, on the possibility of a multiverse?
Well, there are a lot of different ways that we could be in a multiverse, and people use this term to mean different things. But one scenario is just that the universe is much bigger than our observable space, than the part of the universe we can see. And there might be other regions of the cosmos that are so far away from us, we'll never be able to see them, but they have very different laws of physics, very different sort of setups of how things work in those spaces. But there's also this idea of the many worlds interpretation of quantum mechanics, which is where every time a quantum event happens, sort of every time a decision is made, in a sense, a new universe branches off. And so you could have parallel universes that are very similar to ours, but have these small differences. And I think that's one of the things people often mean when they talk about a multiverse. And that's something that it's an idea that's taken seriously by some physicists in thinking about how quantum mechanics works, and I don't have a strong opinion on that, but the problem with multiverses is as amazing as it would be to see them, we don't know of any way to communicate between them in any of these scenarios. Mm-hmm. There are some situations where another universe could have bumped into ours in its early days, you know, in the beginning of the universe, and we actually have ways to search for signatures of collisions with other universes. And so far, we don't have evidence of that happening, but we are looking for it. So there are some really intriguing possibilities for multiverses.
Well, it definitely has some of you deep thinking. Phil tweeted us and said, "Every end is a new beginning." Tom says, "Beginning and ends are human temporal concepts. They are not necessities." Now, Katie, one of the more dramatic ends to the universe that you write about is the Big Rip. And you describe it as a sort of unraveling. What happens there?
So the Big Rip is sort of a worst-case scenario for dark energy. So dark energy is something that's making the universe expand faster and faster. And if it's a particular kind of dark energy that we call phantom dark energy, it could be so powerful that instead of just moving galaxies away from each other, it could actually pull stars away from galaxies, pull planets away from stars, and it would build up and build up until at the end it would be ripping apart atoms and molecules and actually tearing apart space itself.
Oh my God, that sounds painful.
It's an incredibly, it's an incredibly dramatic and violent kind of end. And at the moment, we don't know enough about dark energy to say that it definitely can't happen, but we do know enough to say that if it were going to happen, it would be hundreds of billions of years in the future. So we shouldn't worry about it.
So we won't be alive to experience this scenario.
Right, exactly.
Per se. Well, we got another question from a listener. This is Patricia from Woodbridge.
I heard a presentation a couple of years ago of a gentleman who talked about the space stations and all, but he said that night and day turns around about every 12 minutes when you're in space. And I didn't follow up with a question on that, you know, just to find clarity. But anyway, would like for her to comment on that. Thank you.
So that burning question stayed with Patricia. Can you help us understand how time works in space?
I think that question is specifically talking about astronauts orbiting the Earth, where if you're orbiting the Earth, you get a day and night cycle that's around 90 minutes. So you have 45 minutes in daylight, 45 minutes in night as you're orbiting the Earth. And that's just because of where you are relative to the Earth and the Sun. But time in general can act differently in space, because time can act differently depending on how you're moving through space and how close you are to a gravitating object. So you may have heard that time is weird near black holes. If you get close to a black hole, time slows down for you, and it would appear that everything else is moving faster. Mm-hmm. Also, if you're traveling very fast in a rocket, if you're going close to the speed of light, then your time seems to be slower than the time of things moving outside of the rocket. So you could travel, you know, to another star and back very quickly, and less time will have passed for you than passed on the Earth. So time does get very, very strange and slippery when you're dealing with moving through space in strange ways. And also, time is a weird thing when you think about the cosmos, because when we look at distant objects, we're seeing them as they were in the past. And so it's very hard to define now. Because it's always based on our perspective, how we're moving, where we are, what we're doing.
Well, you know, if you're near a black hole, who's going to be worried about what time it is?
That's a good point. Yeah, you don't want to get near a black hole. It's not a good place to
be. Not a good place to be. Kathleen in Pittsburgh seems to be thinking what I'm thinking. She says, what do you mean the law of physics can change? Is there nothing we can count on anymore?
it's a fascinating thing about physics that we know that the laws of physics are basically temperature dependent or energy dependent. As you have a higher energy environment. So for example, if you're colliding particles inside a particle collider and you get this extremely high energy environment, we see changes to how physics works in that environment. And we think that a similar thing happened in the very early universe. It was a very hot, dense state, and the laws of physics were different in the very early universe, and then they changed to be what they are today. And we have some ideas of how that change happened. But in general, in physics, everything is contingent on the energy state, the ambient energy where you're working. The laws of physics can change.
Okay, we have one more universe-ending theory to discuss with Katie Mack, author of The End of Everything, Astrophysically Speaking. And we'll get into that right after this short break. This is 1A from WAMU and NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor BetterHelp. BetterHelp offers licensed professional counselors who specialize in issues such as isolation, depression, stress, anxiety, and more. Connect with your professional counselor in a safe and private online environment when you need professional help. Get help at your own time and your own pace. Schedule secure video or phone sessions, plus chat and text with your therapist. Visit betterhelp.com/1A to learn more and get 10% off your first month.
I'm Guy Raz, and on NPR's How I Built This, how Mike Radenbaugh slapped a battery and a motor on his bike so he could get to school faster and went on to build the biggest electric bike brand in the U.S., Rad Power Bikes. Subscribe or listen now.
This is 1A. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and we've been discussing various theories about how the universe will end. Now it's time for our final theory, which, Katie, you alluded to earlier, and that's vacuum decay. And this is where the panic can actually now set in, because this one can potentially happen at any time, Katie?
Yeah. And before I get into this, I want to say you should not worry about vacuum decay.
Okay.
And I'll explain why, you know, this is not something to panic about. But as I mentioned, you know, because the laws of physics can change at different energies, we know that the laws of physics were different in the very early universe, and then something happened and set the laws of physics as they are now. And unfortunately, we seem to have found from our experiments, our theories, that it looks like maybe the laws of physics as they are now are not fully stable. Something sets the laws of physics in our universe, sets the constants in nature, sets the kinds of particles we have, how the forces work. And that something is called the Higgs field. It's a kind of an energy field that pervades all of space. And the value that field takes, so sort of how much energy is in that Higgs field, tells you what the laws of physics are. And we know that that Higgs field was different in the very early universe. And the problem is we think it might be able to change again. And what would happen is that there would be some kind of quantum event somewhere in space that would change the Higgs field at that point. And that would change the laws of physics right around that point. And it would create this bubble, a little bubble of space in which the laws of physics are different. It's a bubble called, called a true vacuum bubble.
Okay.
And what would happen then is that bubble would then expand very rapidly through space. It would expand out at about the speed of light and envelop everything. And the problem is you can't exist inside that bubble.
Tell us more about the theory behind vacuum decay.
Yeah, so basically, so there's this bubble that just appears in space due to this quantum event. So it would appear totally randomly. We wouldn't know where or when it would happen. But when it happens, it expands out at the speed of light and just destroys everything. Because if you were inside that bubble, the laws of physics are so different that your atoms can't hold together anymore, and you just can't exist in that space. And so the problem is, because it's triggered by a quantum event, that means that you can't predict when or where it's going to happen, and you don't know for sure that it can't happen now. So if it's something that's possible, it could in principle happen at any time. Fortunately, we can put probabilities on it. We can say that based on everything we know, it's extraordinarily unlikely it would happen any time in the next 10 to the power of 100 years. So trillions and trillions and trillions and trillions of years from now. Mm-hmm. It's intriguing because it sort of suggests that there's a kind of instability in the universe that might destroy it. And that's just built in, and that's part of how particle physics works in our cosmos. So we're trying to figure out if that's even possible.
We'll take your advice and not panic. Now, John Peck, who is 1A's own space nerd on our staff here, he asked if there's a connection between our existence and the universe. He says, if we're alive in the universe and the universe is inside of us, does this work the other way around? Is the universe alive because we are?
Well, that sounds like more of a philosophical question.
Super deep.
Yeah, I mean, we are a product of the cosmos. You know, we are built out of the elements that were formed in stars, elements that were formed in the Big Bang itself, and we've come out of this, the debris of old stars, the leftovers of the Big Bang, and we've sort of evolved in the same way as the galaxies and the stars. And so you can think of that as being this very deep connection to the cosmos. But we don't know of any way of assigning, you know, life or consciousness to the cosmos. But I personally do feel a very strong connection to the universe just because, you know, we are part of it and yeah, we can see it and understand it.
So then how often did you go through an existential crisis doing research for this book?
not too often. I think that one of the things I was trying to do with when I was working on the book was trying to come to terms with the idea that the universe would end. And that is something that I find troubling, the idea that at some point, you know, everything that exists now will just be erased and we will not have mattered. You know, that's a very unsettling thought.
Right.
And one of the things I did with the book is I was traveling around and talking to other physicists about the science in the book to get perspectives and more information. But one of the other things I did is whenever I did those interviews, I would ask, so how does the end of the universe make you feel? Because I wanted to know how these other physicists and cosmologists were dealing with this topic. And so in the epilogue of the book, I have a bunch of different perspectives on what it means for the universe to come to an end. And it was surprising that a lot of people were totally cool with it. Some were kind of depressed about the idea. So there's a huge range, even among physicists, of how we feel about the end of the universe.
And just, you know, with our 30 seconds left, you know, with the ones that struggle with this concept of the end, you know, how do you grapple with that?
I think that it underlies the necessity to live in the moment and find meaning that doesn't have to do with an after-the-fact justification.
Yeah. Well, you've been great, Katie. Thank you so much for joining us. Katie Mack is a cosmologist and author of The End of Everything, Astrophysically Speaking. Glad to have you here.
Thanks so much. This was a lot of fun.
Remember, we have a text club, and we'll only ever send you one text a day. It's also the fastest way to connect with us. Details about how to sign up can be found in the Ask 1A tab at the1a.org. This conversation was produced by Michelle Harvin and edited by Matthew Simonson. You can learn more about them and the rest of the team on our website, the1a.org. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thank you so much for listening. This is 1A.